Details are still hard to come by regarding Belgorod.
Moscow says it killed over 70 militants that they say are Ukrainian, but the two groups claiming responsibility say they're actually Russian nationals against Putin's government.
Plus, a Ukrainian fighter pilot comments on the pending arrival of F-16s.
Fighter jets is the first layer of any combined layered air defense.
And later in the program, volunteer doctors go to Poland to help Ukrainian children receive medical care they can't get at home because of the war. Today is Wednesday, May 24th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. It's still unclear exactly what happened in Russia's Belgorod region or what's going on there now. Wednesday, a Russian official said the region along the border with Ukraine came under attack by drones overnight and Russia shot them down. Ukraine has not commented on this or any other Russian statements about the situation in Belgorod. As Reuters' Matthew Laratonda reports, Russia claims to have crushed the cross-border raid, again a claim that cannot be verified.
Russia's military says it's routed an incursion by armed militants who penetrated a Russian border region with armored vehicles, sparking at least 2 days of battles and civilian evacuations in what appears to be one of the biggest incursions by pro-Ukraine fighters of the war. It happened in the Belgorod area, and this video released by the Defense Ministry is said to show the intensity. Multiple explosions and what appear to be artillery or airstrikes on their own soil. Moscow says it killed over 70 militants that they say are Ukrainian, but the two groups claiming responsibility say they're actually Russian nationals against Putin's government. And their exact relationship to Kyiv is unclear. So who are these groups, and what is known about them? The first group is called the Russian Volunteer Corps, or RVC, and was founded by a far-right Russian national last August. It's composed of Russians who have been fighting for Ukraine against their own country. This video shows one of their fighters slapping a bumper sticker on an armored personnel carrier they say they captured inside Russia. Ukraine's military intelligence agency says the RVC is an independent underground group inside Russia that also has a unit in the Ukrainian Foreign Legion, but the Foreign Legion says it has nothing to do with the RVC. The second group is called the Freedom of Russia Legion, which says it was formed in spring last year and is also composed of Russians. In this video, a purported member is saying they want their children to grow up in a Russia free from corruption, censorship, restrictions on freedom, and repression. It says it operates under Ukrainian command, but Ukraine's military intelligence agency wouldn't confirm or deny that forces in Belgorod are a Ukrainian unit. The regional governor says an elderly woman was killed during evacuations from the fighting and 8 wounded.
That's Reuters' Matthew Laratonda reporting. Keir Giles is a senior consulting fellow at the Chatham House Research Group in London. He also emphasizes that we still don't know exactly who these insurrectionists in Belgorod are or who is giving them orders.
We don't know, and we probably can't know, just what exactly is the relationship between all of the people who are carrying out actions within the Russian Federation and the Ukrainian armed forces or the Ukrainian state. Here, too, we've seen lots of different things which might be linked to Ukraine, which are neither confirmed nor denied by the Ukrainian authorities. But again, it fits part of a pattern that it is not just Ukraine that has an interest in undermining the Russian state and in countering Russia's campaign against Ukraine.
Regardless of their official relationship with the government in Kyiv, Giles believes the situation turns out to be advantageous for Ukraine.
There are a number of different positive impacts for Ukraine's defense against Russia that come from this incursion into the Russian Federation. First of all, it shows that the Russian border is undefended, and this, of course, will cause Russia to divert troops away from the defensive lines elsewhere in Ukraine to try to reinforce that border, to try to prevent anything like this happening again. But also, of course, it's part of a pattern of events that show that Russia is not invincible, and Ukraine can, in fact, deliver damage to Russia itself.
That's not to say, though, that Russia cannot or will not take advantage of the situation. Giles notes the Russians have an excellent opportunity to add this to their propaganda narrative of increasing hostility from the West.
Russia will inevitably portray this as being dangerous and escalatory, but that plays into the overall Russian narrative that anything that impedes Moscow or hampers Russia's war effort is going to inevitably cause severe escalation with the West. Now, that's been a highly successful Russian information campaign because it's constrained Western efforts to support Ukraine. And in fact, it's the reason why rules are put on the weapon systems that are supplied to Ukraine, with the West saying you cannot use these to strike into Russia. That is an enormous advantage for Russia in fighting this war because it forces Ukraine to fight with one hand tied behind its back.
Again, that's Keir Giles of Chatham House. A Ukrainian fighter pilot who goes by the name Juice tells VOA's Maria Prus how F-16s will help Ukraine in the battle against Russian forces.
In terms of what Ukraine has right now, what Ukrainian aviation has right now, can you tell our audience what impact can F-16s make in terms of, you know, the war that is going on right now, short-term and also long-term, for the future security of Ukraine?
Fighter jets is the first layer of any combined layered air defense in any country. And you need fighter jets to intercept all the threats just near the border, just near the front lines, not sitting and waiting for them just in near the city. And unfortunately, using our jets, using our radars, our missiles, we are not effective against cruise missiles, against kamikaze drones. And it's also a very important task for F-16s. With good radars, with advanced missiles, air-to-air missiles. So it's our first priority is to fill this capability gap in sense of air-to-air operations against all the threats.
That's Maria Prus of VOA's Ukrainian service speaking with Juice, a Ukrainian fighter pilot. And speaking of airplanes, a few of them got a little closer than normal over the Baltic Sea near the Russian border. VOA Chief National Correspondent Steve Herman explains.
The Russian Defense Ministry characterizes an incident over the Baltic Sea as an interception by one of its Su-27 fighter jets of two B-1B strategic bombers. The Pentagon spokesman, Air Force Brigadier General Pat Ryder, downplayed the encounter when asked about it by reporters on Tuesday.
It was a safe and professional interaction with Russian aircraft, so nothing significant to report on that front.
The general says the bombers, part of the Air Force Global Strike Command, were participating in a long-planned exercise in Europe. Officials in Moscow say the American aircraft did not cross the Russian border. In recent months, there have been several hazardous incidents between Russian military planes and aircraft of NATO countries. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. The Ukrainian church has decided that, after centuries, it's time for a change. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv explains.
Something very important is happening in Ukraine, important for Ukraine, of course, first of all, and for the Ukrainian society. So for a long time, for centuries, Ukrainian church was living with this old-style calendar, while Ukrainian state has turned, as the rest of the world has turned, to the modern style calendar. And today, Ukrainian church had an official meeting and has officially switched to the modern style calendar. So what does it mean? The changes will be in action from September 2023 onwards. And this means that Ukraine is now celebrating the main religious holidays such as for example, Christmas, together with the rest of the world on the 25th of December, instead of celebrating it on the 7th of January. For the moment, no changes has been applied to the Easter holiday, but and holidays related to Easter. But this is more complicated question, and George just needs more time to work this out. But in general, Ukrainian society had it was a huge question within the and desire within the Ukrainian society for the change in this religious calendar.
Is this change seen as further splitting from Russia or further joining the rest of the world?
I would say further joining the rest of the world, because Ukraine has its own church for years, and officially in this modern history, it was another procedure, and from 2015 there is this official Ukrainian church of this modern times. It's nothing about split, because it was already there are two different institutions. It's more about joining the rest of the world and making church closer to the society, closer to the state, because the state is living its life with normal modern calendar.
And one of the other stories that's been happening this week that seems to get deeper every day we look at it is the insurrection in Belgorod. Has there been any comment from Kyiv? Can you tell us the latest on the situation there?
Well, I should mention that no new official reaction is coming from Kyiv on this case. Kyiv has already commented and official Kyiv, it looks like that official Kyiv has nothing to add. What we have is only information which is coming from Russia and Russian sources, and we cannot verify it independently, and we cannot, of course, confirm it. But what it looks like something continued to happen in that area. And of course, well, if we are talking about Ukraine, for Ukraine, it's in terms of military situation and in terms of war situation, it's of course positive sign, because Russian forces are preoccupied with something else, meaning that that certain forces are not involved in the battles at the front line. From this perspective, this is positive for Ukraine, but we cannot really confirm anything. What we know from Russian sources that Russian forces claim that they have destroyed most of these groups which are involved, these Russian volunteer groups, but Russian volunteer groups say that this is not true. According to the Institute for the Study of War, they are also not sure, but it might be that Russian volunteer groups had to move backwards a little bit closer to the Ukrainian border, but this is not for sure, this is not confirmed. So it looks like something is happening, but definitely we should keep an eye on it, on this situation, because this is not the end.
Sounds good. We'll be keeping an eye on both those stories. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
The head of the Wagner Group and Russia's most powerful mercenary, Yevgeny Prigozhin, often levels direct criticism at the country's top brass in his colorful and often profane videos. Such words are dangerous in Vladimir Putin's Russia. Angela Johnson looks at why he's able to push the envelope.
Bakhmut. As Yevgeny Prigozhin announced the fall of the destroyed Ukrainian city of Bakhmut, Russia's most powerful mercenary appeared to hand its president a rare battlefield victory. The founder of the Wagner Group thanked Vladimir Putin for the opportunity to defend the motherland. But he couldn't resist breaking some taboos. In Bakhmut, we were not only fighting the armed forces of Ukraine, we were fighting the Russian bureaucracy, he said, specifically naming and shaming Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu and Chief of the General Staff Valery Gerasimov.
Shoigu! Gerasimov! Где боеприпасы?
It comes after earlier this month he used a profanity-laden video to criticize the two, accusing them of allowing five times more men to die than was necessary. But this kind of speech is dangerous in Putin's tightly controlled political system. Public criticism of the war isn't tolerated. So how does Prigozhin get away with it? Officials, diplomats, and analysts told Reuters that he's likely acting with the tacit approval of those dismayed by the military's war conduct. Sources diverge on how to interpret his actions. A Russian source said he represents one side in a struggle within Putin's system. A former FSB officer said Prigozhin's verbal lobs towards the defense ministry are the result of contradictions that have come out within the ruling clan. He suggested it could mark the beginning of a struggle for life after Putin. But one Western diplomat told Reuters, Prigozhin would likely make for a weak potential rebel, as he doesn't have an independent logistic capacity. With an election looming next year, it's unclear how long Putin will tolerate the open war of words. State television ignored the apparent fall of Bakhmut for 20 hours. It took the Kremlin 10 to put out a terse, congratulatory statement. And it didn't name Prigozhin. For his part, Prigozhin said he'd hand Bakhmut over to the Russian army by June. Prigozhin, the Kremlin, and the defense ministry did not respond to requests seeking comment.
That's Reuters' Angela Johnston. A team of volunteer doctors from the United States is joining with Polish and Ukrainian colleagues to help heal the scars of some of Ukraine's children. They're getting the much-needed operations that have not been available in Ukraine since the start of Russia's full-scale invasion. Correspondent Lisa Bakalets visited a hospital in Poland and has this report.
At the end of the corridor in Ward 10, 16-year-old Yegor from the central Ukrainian city of Alexandria is waiting for surgery. Doctors will fix scars in his neck. He cannot move his head well because of them. His mother, Tatiana, is at his side.
Everything will be fine, my son. Don't worry.
Yegor has many tattoos. They partially cover the scars left after an incident 4 years ago.
I was 12 years old when I received an electric shock of 27,000 volts. 55% of my body was burned.
Yegor couldn't even count how many surgeries he has had. But from the beginning of the war in Ukraine, the boy has had none.
We don't have planned operations in Ukraine now because the war started, and almost all hospitals are filled with military personnel, so there are only emergency surgeries.
So when Tatiana heard about the initiative involving American doctor Gennady Fuzaylov, she immediately submitted an application. Gennady Fuzaylov is the founder of the organization Doctors Collaborating to Help Children. Since 2010, he has been traveling to Ukraine to operate on children with burn injuries for free. This year, because of the war, Dr. Fuzaylov found an opportunity to bring his team of 11 specialists to Poland.
I'm very proud of my team. These people are very ambitious, productive, great surgeons who practice at Harvard and Michigan Medical School, two leading schools in America, and they took vacations to come here.
Surgeon David Brown has been working with Fuzaylov for almost 10 years. The work is crucial, he says, because the children's burn injuries require constant new surgeries.
Because as they grow, the scars don't grow. And so the scars squeeze and restrict how they can move their arms or use their hands or open their mouths. It's not just about how the scars look, which is terrible, but it's even more important how the child can move their arms and their legs and get around in society.
Doctors have operated on 19 children from different regions of Ukraine.
5 to 6 surgeries were performed on each patient, and if it were not such a set of surgeons that we brought, we would not be able to perform such complex operations on the hands, on the suturing of the nerves, tendons.
From transportation to housing to food, Dr. Fuzaylov's organization paid for everything. The Polish hospital in Lechna was responsible for medical care.
We give them access to our operating rooms, to our wards, and we are providing medical staff to take care of the patients in pre-operative and post-operative periods. We took a great part of costs, and hospital is paying for this, and Polish government is paying for this. So.
Ukrainian doctors take care of the rehabilitation of young patients after surgery. Plastic surgeon Artem Posunko has treated many of them at a hospital in the Ukrainian city of Dnipro. Four other Ukrainian doctors traveled to Poland with him. To him, the exchange of expertise is priceless.
We read the same books and articles, but they do something differently than we do. How can you reduce the time of the operation? How can you do less trauma and do exactly what was planned? This is very important, first of all, for our young patients.
All three teams of doctors, US, Polish and Ukrainian, say that logistics proved to be the most challenging part of this mission. But the process has already been worked out, so all participants hope to perform the operations next year. Lesia Bakalets for VOA News, Lechna, Poland.
An American wine expert has launched a campaign to save Ukrainian wine and wineries that have been nearly destroyed in the war. To raise money and show off the product, she brought some rare Ukrainian wines to the U.S. Irina Solomenko has the story, narrated for us today by Anna Rice.
Gail Corrigan is a U.S. entrepreneur and wine lover. In 2019, she co-founded a company called Sipiravi USA and started importing wine from the country of Georgia to America. And then, in 2020, she tried Ukrainian wine for the first time.
And it was kind of love at first sip. It was delicious.
She expanded her business to import Ukrainian wine to the U.S. as well, just before Russia's invasion. Corrigan decided she would use this wine for charity purposes only.
We're using it to raise awareness and also to raise funds that will go back into the Ukrainian wine industry.
Art Winery is located in the Bakhmut region, where some of the harshest fighting of the war has taken place. The company has been creating sparkling wine for hundreds of years, some of which has become quite rare during wartime. Alexandra Chernichenko, marketing director of Art Winery, says production at the Bakhmut factory stopped when Russia invaded. However, the company managed to move its staff and all its stock to safer areas of Ukraine days after the war started.
Everything above ground was destroyed. It's tough for us to assess the losses because most production lines were below ground, some 72 meters deep underground. And right now, we have no access there.
She says the company is preparing to ship a large batch of wine they managed to save to Corrigan in the U.S.
Gail is our favorite partner. We love working with her and we are very grateful for her help.
For each charity event, Corrigan picks a Ukrainian organization in the U.S. Many of those chosen then organize their own fundraising events with the wine Corrigan gives them.
We had one bottle in an event that happened here in Rhode Island that was auctioned off for $2,000.
Corrigan says she sends all the funds she raises back to Ukrainian vineyards so they can revive their work after the war ends. In the meantime, although all wine production in the Bakhmut region has been put on hold, Art Winery has moved some of its production to safer areas of Ukraine, like the Odessa region. For Irina Salomka in Rhode Island, Anna Rice, VOA News.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.